Thanks to Indeed for sponsoring the Productivity Show. Indeed knows hiring needs to be cost-effective when you're running your own business. Start hiring now at indeed.com/TPS. Terms and conditions apply, and cost per application pricing is not available for everyone. Thanks also to Calm, the number one mental wellness app, for supporting the show. Reduce stress and anxiety through guided meditations, improve focus with curated music tracks, and rest and recharge with Calm's imaginative sleep stories for all ages. Calm is offering you 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/TPS.
Do you use Obsidian, Roam, or any other type of second brain type of apps, then you might be wasting your time. Also, if your company is giving you a budget to transition to work from home, woohoo, what would you buy? Well, we'll give you our top recommendations of apps, gears, and equipment that you need to buy if you want to be productive working from home. And we're also going to be talking about a new trend called quiet weekends to help you achieve work-life balance. Hello, my name is Tam Pham. I'm the founder and CEO of Agent Efficiency, and welcome to The Productivity Show, a podcast where we believe that you can get the important things done without having to sacrifice your health, family, and things that matter to you. And if you are a knowledge worker like you and I am, Brooks, then you are going to be enjoying this episode here today. And if it's your first time listening, welcome to the show. I just want to give you a quick background on the two of us here. My name is Tan. I'm the founder of Agent Efficiency, and I started this back in 2011 to document publicly what I was learning about productivity. And little did I know that it accidentally turned it into a business that it is today. And today I'm joined by my co-host, Brooks Duncan, who's the COO of Agent Efficiency. And we both came from productivity from different backgrounds. And Brooks, I'm curious to hear, what is your story in a nutshell?
Yeah, I come from the corporate world, really. And I became an Outlook wizard. And I realized that the more awesome I became at Outlook, the more I could get done during the day. And I started transitioning to learning about productivity in other areas. So eventually I moved into the startup life, and then I moved into what we're doing now. So I joined the AE team first as a customer, then joined the team, then joined the podcast. And we started this podcast because we wanted to help people become more productive at work and in life. That's kind of our tagline. And we really believe that happy people are productive people. So every single week on the podcast, we share tips, we share strategies to help you win back time, have more energy, and really get focused on what matters. And sometimes we have guests like we did last week, and sometimes it's the two of us like this week. But either way, we always want to make sure the podcast is super actionable, and we really like getting feedback and reviews from listeners. So I saw this review from someone named Super Gurk. I don't know if that's your real name, but Super Gurk writes, "I am now Caucasian efficient." I see what you did there. "This is my favorite weekly productivity podcast I listen to consistently and put into action. The co-host setup is relaxed, conversational, very friendly, and super useful. And the occasional guests they bring on are top-notch, and everyone genuinely wants to help you." So thank you so much for sharing that, Super Gurk, if that is your real name. This is pretty much nails what we want to do from the show. So I really appreciate the feedback. If you're listening to this and you want to get in touch, just leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or you can email us at podcasts@asianefficiency.com. All right, Tan, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about all of those topics we talked about. But like we start every single episode, we like to share our top three resources, and it is my turn this week. So I'm going to share three resources that are making us more productive these days. Number one is a book. It's called The Extended Mind, The Power of Thinking Outside the Brain by Annie Murphy Paul. And that's a really interesting book about how a lot of times we think of our brain as the biggest factor in our productivity and what we do, but really it's about everything around us. It's about our environment. It's about even our gestures. It's about our tools. And it's a book about really extending the mind. So that's tip number one. Tip number two is a website called Talking Points for Life. And it is a library of ready-to-use messages for challenging social situations. And some of us are blessed with this ability to always know what to say in any given situation. But for the rest of us, Talking Points for Life is this collection of things like, How do you tell somebody that they are not going to be your bridesmaid? Or what do you say to a coworker who maybe just lost their partner? Or how do you approach just really any difficult situation? So talking points for life. And the third is one for the iOS and Mac crowd. And you may not know this, but both iOS and Mac have background sounds built right in. You don't need an app if you want to have white noise to work with or pink noise to get focus, or maybe you want some rain sounds or something like that. There's lots of apps that do it, but it's actually built right into iOS and macOS, and it's in the accessibility section. So go to accessibility and then look under the audio and video section, and there is a background sound setting and you can turn it on and off, and it's built right in. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com or just swipe in your podcast app and we'll have the links there as well. And you can find us on YouTube. Go to theproductivityshow.com/YouTube and theproductivityshow.com/clips and like and subscribe. All right. What we always like to do on these news shows is do a roundup of some things that have been happening in the productivity space. And so I will share the first one, and that is Instagram founders are releasing a news app, and it's called Artifact. You can go to artifact.news. And Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger, you might know the story. They're the two guys who started Instagram. They launched it and built it just on their own. And then later they grew a small team and then sold to Facebook for over $1 billion. And then eventually they left. And what they've been working on is a news app. And the way it works is you tell it the topics that you're interested in, and then it will give you recommendations for news stories on those topics. And what they say is the more you use it, the better it learns. So for example, for me, there's a bunch of tech, travel, finance articles, which are all stuff that I want to check out. But you can also add contacts, and it will show you what articles are popular with people in your network. Not with specific people, but with people in your network. And eventually they say they're going to add social features so you can chat about news items with your friends and stuff like that. And I've heard people say the ultimate goal is to kind of out-Twitter Twitter and return Twitter to its roots of talking about things that are going on. So that's number one. The second topic is there is a new personal knowledge management app called Tana. So you can go to tana.inc, and Tana is really the everything OS. There's a waitlist for it right now. We have early access to it and we really, really like it. So we think this might be the next killer app in our industry. So check out the waiting list, go to tana.inc, and hopefully you can get in soon. And then the final item is, and don't laugh at this, but there's an update to Windows 11 and it is adding tabs to Notepad. And we never really talk about Notepad. I don't know if we've ever mentioned it on the show, but I bet it is one of the most used apps in the world. If you've never used Windows, it is basically the stock text editor built into Windows. It's been around forever. I used to use it on Windows 3.1. And what happens is power users switch to things like Notepad++ because of missing features like tabs. And people are actually really excited that this is starting to happen. The CEO of Epic Games, Tim Sweeney, even tweeted about it. And I really like the fact that they're making these type of changes. They're adding screen recording features to their snipping tool, which is their screenshot app. And the reason I wanted to bring this up, because it's great to see both Microsoft and Apple adding features to their default productivity apps. These things have huge usage, and it's great to see that they're starting to really invest and give these apps some love. So what do you think, Tan? Are you going to be switching to Notepad now?
I think everybody that listens to the Productivity Show knows that I'm not personally a big Windows user myself, but I can imagine a lot of people who are using Windows are probably very ecstatic and excited, because personally, even on the Mac, I prefer apps that have a tab with anything. So for example, I'm not a big fan of the Finder app that comes with Mac because it doesn't have any tabs. And they recently started adding stuff like that. But for the most part, when I first learned about it and started using Mac, it didn't have it. So I always switched over to Pathfinder, and I've always been a power user since then. So even though when they introduced it back a few upgrades ago to Finder, I still didn't want to switch back because now I was so used to using Pathfinder. So same thing with like all the other writing apps that I have, like I really like Byword, for example, but Byword does a poor job of managing tabs. It's really good at just having one window open. But when it comes to tabs, like other apps are a lot better. And so I'm a big fan of tabs in general. So if you are someone who likes using tabs in the different apps, I think you should be excited to the fact that Notepad is going to have tabs now. What I am really excited about, though, is the fact that Tana is being released. I've been playing around with Tana for about 2-3 weeks now, and I probably spent like 30-40 hours on it, learning about it, experimenting, watching a ton of YouTube videos by developers. And I truly believe that this is the next killer app in our industry. If you think about Airtable and Roam having a baby, this is what Tana would look like. And that's the best analogy that I can give that really explains how this app works. It's a little technical right now. And most apps that are so early in the alpha stages are usually very technical. But I wouldn't be surprised if in about a year from now, it'll be a lot more simpler and easier to use. And there'll be a lot more bugs that shouldn't be in there right now. And so if you're able to get early access, go sign up for the waitlist right now. You might have to wait a few months to get early access, but trust me, it's going to be worth it. It's like the next game changer. I set up basically a whole personal CRM system in there. So I have like 200 contacts that I put in over the last 2-3 weeks. And what I like about Tana is that you can interlink a lot of ideas and notes and people and different tags. And so you kind of create this like wiki that is really easy to use and very simple. And it just makes sense in my brain for some reason. I've tried a lot of like other apps like The Brain and different mind maps and Notion and Obsidian and Roam and even Airtable. But they all do one thing really well. But the one thing they don't do well is connecting all these different ideas together. And what Tana does really well is you can connect all these different ideas, but also you can display it in different formats. So for example, you can have a list of stuff, you can turn it into a table, you can turn it into a Kanban board, and it's all the same information, but easily morphed in different formats. And that makes it really easy to find stuff, create stuff, add stuff, edit stuff. I'm a big fan of it, and I truly believe that this is the next killer app. So everybody should be starting using it right now. If you're listening to the Productivity Show, sign up for Tana right now.
All right, you heard it here first. Tan is all in on Tana. All right, let's get into some of the industry happenings. And I'm going to start with a hot take. I'm curious what you think about this, Tan, but the hot take is Obsidian, Roam, and all of these other second brain apps, not including Tana, hopefully, honestly, might be wasting your time. And what made me think of this is that there's this YouTube video going around by Sam Matla, and he talks about how PKM apps like Obsidian, Roam, Notion, he mentions, Logseq, are for many people, not everybody, don't at me, but for many people, a form of sophisticated procrastination. And the reason we use them really is just because it makes us feel smart. And some other examples that he gives of this are like watching 50 YouTube videos about something without actually taking action, or maybe making these huge project plans and mind maps and stuff like that that are outdated before you even get started. Or maybe we all know somebody like this, right? Endlessly talking about your big idea without actually doing anything. And he calls this sophisticated procrastination. And I like this distinction that he makes between the different types of procrastination. There's obvious procrastination. And usually when people come to us, Tan, write us emails and stuff like that, usually it's obvious procrastination that they're struggling with, right? They're being on social media, they're watching Netflix, they're playing video games when they know that they feel like they should be doing something else. And this doesn't feel good. In fact, we often feel guilty and we feel like we're not doing what we should. Whereas on the flip side, sophisticated procrastination are things like reading and organizing emails, or testing out Obsidian plugins, or doing research, or catching up on a project's Discord and spending a bunch of time in there. And stuff like this is insidious because it feels good. We're actually doing something. We're taking some sort of action, or at least it feels like it, and it makes us feel smart. But the problem is that feeling good doesn't necessarily mean better work. This good feeling that we get from sophisticated procrastination, this feeling smart that happens, it doesn't actually translate into us moving forward in a lot of ways. And it's not that the tools themselves are bad. We're not saying that Obsidian is a bad tool or that Roam is a bad tool or anything like that. And in fact, a lot of people use them really well. In the comments of that video, there's some interesting points that some neurodivergent people are making, saying that these types of apps just made such a huge difference in our life. So it's not for me or for us to say that that is not a good thing. Obviously it is. It's just that in many cases, a lot of us are just always chasing more and more instead of actually executing on things. It's this concept from the Zettelkasten site called the collector's fallacy, which is to know about something isn't the same as actually knowing something. Collecting facts is not actually really that deep knowledge that helps us take action. Now, Tan, you've been saying some version of this for a long time, but do you think it's possible to find a balance and feel smart and be productive?
So when I watched this video by Sam Matla talking about how all these PKM apps like Obsidian, Roam, and Second Brain type of apps are potentially sophisticated forms of procrastination, I thought that made a lot of sense. However, I would say there is a couple points where that might actually be a good thing. And the reason I say that is, for example, we have ChatGPT right now, like taking over the world, right? It's this new piece of technology. It has this amazing potential. And in order for you to master any particular skill, you have to be able to do stuff and wander around and mindlessly sometimes play with stuff in order for you to learn, pick up some things and master a particular skill or master a particular tool. So if you're somebody who plays around with Obsidian and Roam and tries different plugins and is experimental, it can feel like sophisticated procrastination in that sense. However, I would say that there's actually a lot of value to that as well, because if you're committed to mastery, if you're committed to becoming really good at something, you have to have time and space to do those type of things, right?
I just came back from vacation and had the usual travel issues that everyone else experiences these days. However, there was one employee that just made everything better and made the whole travel experience almost a pleasure. As a business owner, that's the type of hire you want to make. Someone who just makes everything great. Well, if you're hiring, you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. You don't want to have to spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. You want to just save time, which of course saves you money. You can find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. And in fact, Indeed's US data shows that over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. And that is because of Instant Match. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description, and then you can just invite them to apply right away. You don't need to wait for them to come to you. Instant Match will find them for you. Indeed knows that when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. Visit Indeed.com/TPS to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/TPS. That's Indeed.com/TPS. Terms and conditions apply, and cost per application pricing is not available for everyone. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. I just returned from vacation, which was great, but let's just say there were quote-unquote moments, especially traveling with family who I love, but, you know, teenagers, right? I was so happy to have the Calm app with me and so happy that we're partnering with Calm, the number one mental wellness app, to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. I use it every day, even on airplanes, even on beaches, and if you go to calm.com/TPS, you'll get a special offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, and new content is added every week. Calm helps you stress less, sleep more, and really live a happier, healthier life. There are guided meditations, sleep stories, relaxing music tracks, and daily movement sessions are all designed to give you the tools to improve the way you feel. Before I went on this trip, I was smart. I made sure that I had my favorite meditations and sleep stories downloaded for offline access. It came in really handy on the plane. I used the sleep stories on a red eye, which was very, very helpful. And then I used it when I had really bad Nicaraguan Wi-Fi. No problem. I could just access the meditations that I liked. It really kept me grounded during the travel situations that we all deal with these days, really. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/TPS. Go to calm.com/TPS for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library.
Just like when I'm learning about Tana, I'm playing around with it. I'm spending hours watching YouTube videos, learning about it, trying different things. And even though I don't have like a specific goal or a specific project or an outcome that I'm working towards, like I'm not even telling myself that I want to become a Tana master. However, by playing around with it and seeing what's possible, it creates all these different ideas and inspiration and creativity that otherwise wouldn't be there because I'm just like so focused going from A to B that there's no time and space for the creative work and for the creativity to kick in. So I think there's this balance you have to figure out where, okay, if I'm being responsible for a particular outcome, like I have to get something done at work, I have a goal that I'm chasing after, I'm responsible or accountable for something to be done, then yes, that should be priority number one, and that's what you should be doing. And anything else besides that is a distraction. However, if we're done with those things and we have some extra time or we have time and space and energy to do other things that aren't required of us today, tomorrow, or anytime soon, then diving into something like this and doing something like sophisticated procrastination, like reading stuff, trying different plugins, doing some research is actually valuable time as well. And just like watching Netflix is not necessarily a bad thing in itself, like it can help you relax at night. It can help you learn about pop culture. It can teach you educational stuff as well, right? The activity itself is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just the context around it that makes the difference whether something is productive or not, right? If I've worked all day long and I got all my stuff done and then I watch Netflix at the end, that's in context could be a reward. It could be a good thing. It helps me relax, maybe go to bed a little bit more calm and decrease my anxiety, right? But if I'm supposed to get this project done by this deadline that's later today and I'm watching Netflix before my deadline, that makes no sense in that scenario. And so context really matters in this case. And so I would say that sophisticated procrastination is all about context. It can be a good thing under the right circumstances. However, if we know that we have to do something before a specific deadline or we have a goal, there's something else that is a higher priority and that is not completed first, then yes, that would be a sophisticated way of procrastinating and not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
What we always say is, how do you know if you had a good day? How do you know if you had a productive day? And one of the ways you do that is by having a daily target. So I guess if you are meeting your daily target, whatever that happens to be, then sure, go ahead, spend a bunch of time learning Tana or Obsidian or whatever. But if you find that you're not meeting that target more often than not, that's usually a sign that you're probably on the sophisticated procrastination end of things versus the execution things.
Yeah, inside of the 25X productivity system, which is our productivity methodology and our course where we teach this system, we talk about the daily target, like you just mentioned. And it's the whole idea that there is no universal metric that says, if you do this, then you are productive, right? So a universal metric would be something like, well, if you spend 2 hours per day uninterrupted doing focused work, then you are a productive person. I think that's a great standard, but it doesn't guarantee that you're a productive person that day because some work can be done in 20, 30 minutes. And if you hit your outcomes, it doesn't matter whether you spend 2 hours or 30 minutes on something, right? The outcome is done and accomplished. And that's ultimately what oftentimes most of us are being assessed by. And so everyone's job and role is a little bit different. So that's how we came up with the daily target, which is the idea that you want to ask yourself, before I start working today, what would make for a productive day? How do I know I had a productive day? And whatever the answer to that question is, that is the score that you will compare yourself to whether you had a productive day or not, right? Because some days you have meetings, so you don't get a lot of work done. Some days you have no meetings at all and you have a lot of free time, and then you can push yourself a little bit. So every day is a little bit different versus like when we're in the industrial age. If we were held accountable for 10 widgets per day and you hit 10 widgets, woohoo, like you had a productive day. But if you didn't hit your 10, then you know you had an unproductive day. And that was a very simple metric that we could hold people accountable to because it was very one-dimensional. But most of us are knowledge workers today, and every day is a little bit different, and the types of work we do changes by the day. And so, like you said, Brooks, this is all about context. And if you can understand what the context is, then you can know deep down inside whether you're actually moving forward and doing something that is great and helps you develop your knowledge, your career, right? Versus saying, hey, I really shouldn't be doing this because there's other things I should be focusing on right now.
All right, let's switch gears and do a fun little thought experiment, which is, if you were given a work from home budget, what would you buy? And what triggered this is Apartment Therapy put out this article called The 11 Items I Bought with My Work from Home Stipend to Increase My Productivity. And so, of course, I had to read it. And it made me wonder that if a company gave me a bunch of money to work from home, and of course, you're welcome to do this anytime, Tan, you have my PayPal, what would I buy? And so the article didn't say how much money the author received. That actually would have been a useful parameter. But here are some of the things that she bought. So she bought improved lighting because the light in her office was not so good. The way she did it is having sconces up on the wall around her. And it's, of course, also better for a Zoom call to have better lighting. She also bought an hourglass timer, like an actual glass hourglass for Pomodoros. She bought a sound machine to make white noise and that type of thing. She bought a better laptop stand. She bought a wireless charger. She bought a rug to help with acoustics and just to make the room feel nicer, to have the vibes. And of course, she bought a second monitor. So how about you, Tan, if you weren't already set up, which I know you are, but if XYZ Corp bought Asian Efficiency and gave you a work from home budget, what sort of things would you use it for? And is there anything on her list that you wouldn't bother with?
So if you're new to working from home and you have to set up your home gear, there's a few items that I think everybody needs from day one. We actually have a whole course about this called Home Office Hero, and it will show you how to set up your home office. And it gives you like 7 items that we think are essential, but I'm going to name a few of them here that you can use right out the gate. So number one is everybody needs a headset, because as you're working from home, you're going to be doing a lot of calls. So you want to make sure you have a quality headset. And there's a recommendation that we have inside the course. Because you're going to be a lot of Zoom calls, you know, team calls, making sure that your audio quality is really good and top notch is priority number one. You can get away with bad video, but you cannot get away with bad audio. So make sure you have a quality headset. And I was actually surprised that that was not even in the list. So that's the first thing I would say is get a quality headset. The second thing I would say is lighting. I agree that lighting is very important, especially when you're working from home. Everyone's lighting situation is going to be a little different. So anything you can set up behind your monitor to show light on your face is a good idea. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It could be anywhere from like $20 lamps to a cube that you put on your screen for like $50 or so. Don't go too crazy. You can literally spend thousands of dollars on special types of lamps because they mimic the sun and have a certain color scheme and such. This doesn't have to be fancy at all. $50 or less, you should be taken care of. The third thing I would recommend that most people don't spend enough time and money on is actually the gadgets and accessories that you use day to day. So for example, the keyboard, the mouse that you use, those are accessories that you use every single day, almost every minute of the day, and pick the ones that you like the most. If you don't like your keyboard, get a different keyboard. If you don't like your mouse, get a different mouse. I know you're a big fan of the Elgato Stream Deck. Like, that's a big thing for a lot of people now where they just push buttons and off they go. Like, they have their apps up and running, right? So I don't have one myself. It's been on my cart for the longest time. I just got to pull the trigger at some point. But if you're somebody who's working from home and you want to be extremely efficient, get yourself an Elgato Stream Deck.
Big Stream Deck fans here. And you are so right about keyboard and mouse setup. During COVID, when my wife started working from home, we didn't have a setup for her, but I had this old junky keyboard that was in a drawer and I gave it to her and she just really suffered with it. And it's funny how just something like that made such a big difference. And it's not that it didn't work, it worked fine, but it was small, it wasn't very tactile, and it was just a nightmare. Another thing I would mention is a chair. So she didn't mention anything about a good chair. So we have, like you said, in that Home Office Hero, which we'll link to in the show notes, has some recommendations on that. I have a Herman Miller Mura, which is just okay. It's expensive, but there are better options now, I would say. But a chair is another good one. I don't know that if I was her, I don't know that I would buy a sound machine. We just talked about how it's built into Mac and iOS, but there's lots of different apps that can do this as well. So me personally, having yet another gadget to do that wouldn't be for me. But if that works for her, that's great.
I will say that the article from Apartment Therapy where they talk about the work from home budgets, the 11 items that she bought, I was like, all right, this list is okay. This could be a lot better, which is why we created our Home Office Hero course, because it has very specific things. And you and I have been working from home for like a decade plus now. And there were just a few items that were just so obvious that were not in there whatsoever. So like having a better laptop stand is not going to move that needle that much. An extra wireless charger, it's like a nice to have, but not like crazy mandatory. There's many other things if you have a limited budget that you should be spending your money towards, like the headset, like you said, the chair. Those are things that move the needle. Like a sound machine is really not worth it, in my opinion.
All right, Tan, you had something that you wanted to talk about. So why don't you let us know what you wanted to discuss?
So there's this new trend called quiet weekends that helps you achieve work-life balance. There's actually an article in stylist.co.uk where a career trends expert, her name is Jill Cotton, says that quiet weekends are the solution to avoiding burnout. She suggests that people do this: front-load the work week and change up what you do on Fridays to help you have an easy transition into the weekend. So the idea here behind this quiet weekend is not that necessarily you're doing particular activities on Saturday and Sundays to recharge. What her idea is that if you have a typical Monday through Friday schedule, she suggests that you clear Fridays from long meetings, hard deadlines, and highly collaborative activities or tasks that cannot be done that particular day or have to be finished that particular day. And I kind of like this idea in a sense that if you do most of your collaborative work and hard meetings and deadlines and stuff earlier in the week, one, if you miss it, you have some extra buffer time to catch up on them, right? Let's say a deadline is on Wednesday, you can catch up on Thursday and Friday, versus saying if the deadline is on Friday, you might have to stay much longer in the office. You might be dreading yourself. You're not going to get all excited going into the weekend because you're kind of like grumpy about the fact that you had to stay a little bit longer at the office, right? So she's actually suggesting to change the structure of your work week where you do most of the important stuff and pressing stuff earlier in the week. So as we like to call it, front loading, and then keep your Fridays to a little bit like a looser structure. Now, she's not saying that Fridays are like mail-in days where you just kind of like half-ass do your work and just kind of show up, you know, with a laissez-faire attitude of like, oh, it's Friday, you know, like not much going on today. She's not suggesting that whatsoever. She is suggesting just to structure it in such a way so that you can do a little bit more easier activities on that particular day, and it helps you ease into the weekends. And I thought that was a really interesting suggestion. And when I think about how we do things at AE, I would say that's actually very true for most of the things that we do. Typically at AE, most of the hard work is done Monday through Wednesday. And Wednesday is also our meeting day. So we have all of our meetings on Wednesday so that when Thursday rolls around, we have follow-up day to be able to execute on some of the things we talked about in the meetings, right? And then there's never a hard deadline on Friday, because if we do have any deadlines, it's typically on Thursday mornings, because that's typically when our sprint ends. And so we don't feel this crazy anxiety to be like, okay, I have to stay till the office at 11 p.m. because this thing needs to be done on this particular day. And that is done by design. And so when I read this article, I thought, oh, that's actually pretty smart. And we kind of do this already, but just never put it into words like that.
I had never really thought about it, but you're so right that that is exactly what we do. And I'm so glad that you put this topic in, because it's actually something I've been meaning to talk about on these episodes for quite a while. And it's this concept of front loading. And I first started thinking about it as quote unquote a thing by seeing some tweets by somebody named Steph Smith. So she is the host of the A16Z podcast. She was with The Hustle for a long time, but she also has books and courses about the way people work. And she talks about this idea of front loading a lot and how the 40-hour work week, the 9-to-5, really comes from a bygone era that doesn't necessarily need to apply now. Now, it still does apply to a lot of us, but the only reason for it now really is because it's the default. So what she says is, and this is a quote from her, she says, "Over time, I found that working really hard on Mondays and then slowly easing up by Friday worked really well for me." So her structure for how she structures her week, at least when she wrote this, is I prefer a 12-hour, 12-hour, 8-hour, 6-hour, 2 spread for her week compared with 8, 8, 8, 8, 8. And I thought that was really, really interesting. And if you're somebody who is not able to just have that 2 on a Friday, even if you do 12 on a Monday and Tuesday, I like the idea that you had 2 of maybe you have to be present. Maybe that's just the way your work is. You have to be present 9-to-5 on a Friday, but maybe you can structure your week in a way that Friday is more unstructured so that you are able to take things that weren't able to get done through the rest of the week. And maybe you have the margin to do those things on Friday so you can roll into that quiet weekend.
I like the idea of front loading your week in the sense that if you think about your Fridays as less structured days and you make them a little bit more structured on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that almost gives you a little bit more leeway on Friday to have an easier day so that you can easily transition into the weekend feeling excited and relaxed instead of stressed and anxious. And if you can think about how you can restructure your week in such a way, I think it will make such a big difference even if you work the same number of hours in a given week. So I'm not suggesting that you just mail in your Fridays and do absolutely nothing. What I am suggesting is how can you restructure your week in such a way that your Fridays are relatively easy in comparison to what it is now. And what you'll notice that question makes you think about, okay, if I can maybe work an extra hour on Monday and maybe an extra hour on Tuesday, then I could maybe have 2 hours less on Friday. Wouldn't that be nice? And that small little tweak can oftentimes make such a big difference. And also, if you're entering the weekend feeling a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more excited, then you're more likely to show up on Monday feeling excited about the work that's coming up and more rejuvenated. So it can be such a simple tweak that we make, but makes such a big difference as well. So if there's one action item to wrap up the episode here today that we can recommend is think about how can you restructure your week so that your Fridays are a little bit easier? And I think if you think about that and implement that starting next week, you'll probably notice an easier work week and you'll probably enjoy your weekend a little bit more as well. So think about implementing this quiet weekend idea. And I appreciate you listening to The Productivity Show. You can find links to everything that we talked about in the show notes at theproductivityshow.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.